Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand.
Welcome to Shrink Wrap, the talk show that helps you unwrap the issues blocking your road to a happy and fulfilling life. I'm licensed marriage and family therapist Phyllis Chase. We're here on KCSN 88.5 FM, Arts and Roots Radio, and we're here every Tuesday evening at Drive Time. Stay tuned to Shrink Wrap because it's really all about tuning into you. Tonight, we're talking with Dr. Jen Berman, author of the Los Angeles Times bestselling book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. Dr. Jen also writes a monthly parenting column for LA Family Magazine, and you may have seen her on Oprah or The Today Show. Jen has a private practice here in LA and is also busy raising twins. So we're so happy you made it out to join us. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, I'm happy to be talking about this. I love this book because it is, I mean, parents are so busy, like yourself, with a career and twins.
Yes.
And that they can really just pick up this book for one issue that they're having at the moment.
Sure.
That's who you wrote it for.
And that was my goal. You know, what I really wanted to do was I've been working in the field for about 17 years. I have traveled the country doing television and radio, and I really tried to look at it. And I also have a parenting column that's been running for over 6 years now. And I really tried to look at what are the issues that parents ask me about the most in my private practice, in all of those different places, and what are the issues that I as a parent really want information about. And I condense it into 36 different chapters, one for each letter of the
26.
Alphabet. 26, I'm sorry, excuse me, yes, I misspoke. There are 26 different chapters, one for each letter of the alphabet, and each one stands on its own. So the busy parents don't have to read a book from cover to cover. They can pick up the chapter that is about the issue that is concerning them at that moment, or of course they can read it cover to cover, but I really just want it to be a quick, easy read for parents as they need it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with A is for Apple.
A is for Apple, which is all about how to help your children have a healthy relationship with food. And in this day and age, It is such a difficult issue, and I did an episode of the Tyra Banks Show not that long ago, and I worked with the topic. It was, I'm 8 years old and I hate my body. And it was these 8-year-old girls who all had eating disorders and hated their bodies and were just so unhappy and struggling. And unfortunately, I see more and more kids in my practice who either have eating disorders or the beginning of eating disorders at a very young age or are obese. And those seem to be sort of the two big issues when it comes to food and our kids. And a lot of parents don't realize how powerful the messages are that we give our kids when we're talking about ourselves, because every one of these mothers, I also got to work with the mothers on the show, and every one of these mothers was a mother who stood in front of the mirror and pinched her thighs and said, my thighs are too fat, or I hate my body, or I'm too fat, or when they sat down to eat, oh, carbs are bad, fats are bad. And all of these kids had internalized all of these terrible messages, and we're saying the exact same things, and we're terrified of food, and we're terrified of being overweight or having any extra flesh when, you know, at 8 years old, you're supposed to have a little baby fat. You're not supposed to be all skin and bones, not that you ever are supposed to be. So I really wanted to make sure to address that issue in this book and also to address the obesity issue.
How do you tell parents to deal with all the junk foods that kids are exposed to on, you know, school?
Well, that's actually, my answer is going to be a little different than what you would expect. And I really do believe in good nutrition and that parents, first of all, to start with, parents have to have the right information. Parents need to be educated about nutrition and do their homework. Once they have that information, I really believe in exposing your kids to all different kinds of foods, to not say we don't eat any junk food in this house. And I even hate the word junk food. I refer it a lot of the time to junk food as fun food. If you say to your kids, you can't eat that, we don't have that in this house, what happens and what I see over and over again is these kids go to their friends' houses and they're sitting in the cabinet eating all the cookies while the mom is like, haven't you ever seen a cookie before? I have a friend who says to me, I can always tell which kids have families that allow them to have sweets and which ones don't, because they come to my house and the ones that don't can't get enough of the sweets in my house. And that's the thing. You put a bunch of kids in a room and you say you can play with any toy except this pencil. What do they want to play with? They want to play with that pencil, even if they're surrounded with expensive toys. And it's the same thing with food. If you create that dynamic of deprivation and you can't have that, that's all kids want.
Sure.
So we have to teach our kids to learn to listen to their bodies. We have to teach them to eat when they're hungry, to stop when they're satisfied, satisfied. Although the truth is, kids are born with that ability. We want to make sure that they can keep them, because we've all seen a kid run out and play and then comes inside and says, oh, I'm hungry. And then you give them their favorite food and they eat until they're satisfied. And then they go back out and play, leaving a half a cookie on their plate.
Isn't that great?
It is. And we all should strive to be like that, to work to really listen to our bodies and listen to our body's cues, because our bodies are really smart. It's the emotional stuff that gets in the way as adults of us making good choices.
True. Well, what would you say is the biggest mistake parents are making today?
I would say that probably the biggest mistake that I see is parents who are trying so hard to make their kids happy that they don't have boundaries with them, and that they say things and then don't follow up on it. And what most parents don't realize, most parents today just want their kids to be happy. And what they don't realize is that in order to have happy kids in the long term, we have to oftentimes have unhappy kids in the short term. For example, let's say you tell your child, please don't throw the ball in the house. If you throw the ball in the house, you're going to lose a ball for 24 hours. You come home, you've had a long day at work, you're exhausted, you have to get some food on the table, and your kid throws the ball in the house, but doesn't break anything. It's really easy in that moment to say, don't worry about it, just don't do it again. But what you do when you say don't worry about it is you teach your kid that I don't say what I mean what I say. The rules don't apply to you, and you don't really have to listen to me. And well, yeah, no, it's not a big deal in that one instance if you don't take the ball away, but you are sending a message, and if that becomes a pattern, then you're headed for trouble with your kid. And, you know, we saw, look at Paris Hilton. She thought the rules didn't apply to her and got in her car drunk and drove and thought, I won't get arrested. I don't have to show up to court on time. We don't want to raise kids who don't think the rules don't apply to them.
I think that's really so true, because parents really mistake, as you say, making their child, having happy children is not having a child that has to learn the rules and tolerate.
Yeah.
The misery
And also parents have to learn to tolerate the misery. You know, I just had a conversation with a girlfriend of mine. We were talking about her kids, and she was saying to me how hard it is for her to see her kids unhappy. That it's like her child falls down and right away she wants to make it better. Here, you know, have a pacifier. Here, like, let's not cry. Let's make it go away. And as parents, nobody wants to see their child struggle. But as parents, we have to realize that our kids have to struggle to learn. They have to fall down and get hurt and cry and experience that emotion instead of avoid it, so that they can become adults who know how to deal with emotions, know how to deal with sadness, and know how to deal with life.
To know that they'll get through it.
Exactly.
To see it through. And so what advice do you give to parents to sort of breathe through it? Or
yes, to breathe through it, and also to tolerate your child's array of emotions. Mm-hmm. That it's okay if your child is sad. It's okay if your child is angry. And anger is one that parents tend to have a lot of trouble dealing with, especially when you have a child who looks at you and says, I hate you, or I wish that I had a different mommy. Or, you know, kids can say some pretty hurtful things, and they don't necessarily mean it. They mean it in the moment. They're frustrated. And what we need to do as parents is look at what's really going on. My kid doesn't really want a new mom. My kid wants to play with the ball. You know, my kid wants to be able to watch TV, and I'm making a boundary and he's struggling with it. And that's okay. And I'm not going to change my boundary just because he's struggling with it.
Why is it important, you say, for children to experience failure?
It's really important for kids to experience failure for a number of reasons. Failure is kind of, it's a learning curve. This is how we learn. And if we don't fail in life, we don't have the opportunity to sort of adjust our behaviors. I think of it as like if you're throwing darts at a dartboard. Each time you throw the dart, you alter your throw based on your previous experience where you didn't get right in, you didn't get it perfect. And so life is the same way. Each time we do something in life that we don't succeed, we alter our behaviors and get a little better based on that experience. Also, it's really important that parents teach their kids that you can fail and I still love you. You don't have to be perfect. And that's especially important in this day and age where parents have tremendous expectations of their kids. And kids do need to know, I don't have to be perfect. And also, this is how we develop resilience. When we fail and then we try again, that's how we become tougher. That's how we become resilient. And we all want resilient kids. And that makes happy, confident kids in the long run.
Definitely. And successful adults, right?
Because
exactly. That's the new test of resiliency and flexibility is one of
exactly.
the qualities.
You wouldn't be here if you failed in life and then gave up. I'm sure you've had your own successes and failures. And I know I wouldn't be here because I had my share of failures, but I had to say, okay, time to move on. That hurt. That was painful. But it's time for me to try again.
Yep.
And we want to teach that to our kids.
We sure do. So, you know, I know that a lot of parents struggle with that, you know, to limit the television watching, and that's the T in your
yes.
A to Z. Tell us about what your philosophy is about watching television. And
well, I feel very
ages.
Strongly
okay.
about this. And in my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I devoted the whole T chapter, T is for Teletubbies, to television, because I think that there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I also think there's so much parents don't know, and you can't make an educated decision about what you're going to let your child do unless you know. A few things. First of all, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no television at all before the age of two. That includes...
Not even Sesame Street,
yeah, no,
right?
Sesame Street, no DVDs, no computer time, no screen time, period. And a lot of parents have been under the mistaken impression that videos like Baby Einstein, Brainy Baby, all of those kind of educational, infantainment, as we call it, videos will help give their kids an extra edge. And of course, we all want to be able to take a shower. It's easy to plop your kids in front of the TV. But what studies have actually shown is that for every hour of that kind of educational DVD that your child watches, children on average had between 6 and 8 fewer vocabulary words per hour watched of those DVDs per week. So it really is a disservice to let your child watch that. Not to mention that when children watch television, their metabolic rate slows down by 12%. For obese children, it actually slows down by 18%. And you can almost see it. Like if you watch kids, they get this glazed look. Yeah, you know, that kind of open mouth, kind of glazed look on their face. Their metabolic rate is really, it's slowing down. In addition, what researchers are now saying is that today's quick images of television actually rewire children's brains, making them more vulnerable to ADD and ADHD and all kinds of learning disorders. Not to mention that today's television, today's marketing, advertisers target kids in a way that they've never targeted kids before, because children have buying power and the advertisers know it. And kids not only have buying power in that kids now have money in their wallets that they can spend themselves, but kids are so influential in how their parents spend their money, and marketers know it. But kids don't know that. Kids don't understand, especially younger kids, oh, this is a paid actor. He may be lying to me. This isn't necessarily true. He doesn't necessarily use this product. It may not be the best product. So kids get all this information, and it really... I find that it makes kids so much more materialistic. The more television they watch, I see the more they say, I want this cereal, I want that clothes, I have to have that. And we're in such a materialistic culture to begin with, it only makes it worse.
Mm. We're talking with Dr. Jen Berman. Her website is Dr. spelled out Jen, JENN.com.
DOCTORJENN.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Good, because it's not just the doctor,
yes,
DR,
exactly.
Right? It's doctor spelled out.
If you do that, you'll get some woman's holiday vacation pictures.
Oh, well, we don't want that. No, yeah. We want to learn all about, and her book is The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Children. And that's what we're talking about tonight here on Shrink Wrap. I'm Phyllis Chase, and I'm a marriage and family therapist, and you're listening to KCSN 88.5 FM. We were named Best of LA by Los Angeles Magazine. So, I mean, what age do you say it is okay to watch television? For kids to watch television, how much?
Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics says nothing before the age of two. So
right.
I totally agree with that. I say nothing before the age of two. Then you have to start bringing it in. But one of the things that I recommend to parents is that don't just put your kid in front of the TV and leave the room. If you're going to watch TV, it's not a vacation for you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. So many parents are going to be so mad
That's
at me for saying
question.
This.
Yeah,
yeah what we found is that the best way to use the television with kids is to have it be interactive, because that's the way that they don't lose vocabulary words. That's the way that they actually learn from it. It's if you can pause a video and say, oh, wow, did you see the dog? What color is the dog? Oh, why do you think the dog was flying? Do dogs really fly? You know, that kind of thing. Then you can engage with your child, because it's really the truth. truth is it's the interaction with adults that increase children's vocabulary, IQ, understanding, all of that kind of stuff.
And I would imagine they wouldn't go into the zone and their metabolism rate would not drop as well.
Exactly, because it's interactive.
Okay. Well, now I'm a parent and I'm going, well, when do I get a break? Like
when they sleep. I tell you, since I was up all night with two kids throwing up on me, that doesn't always happen. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, parenting is the toughest job in the world. And you know, don't get me wrong. I love my kids. I couldn't love my children more, but I also couldn't be more exhausted.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel a sense of responsibility. I owe it to my children to be the best parent that I can be and to give them that one-on-one time and to give them that focus and to not just put them in front of the TV. And look, as kids get older, it changes a bit, but I really encourage parents to give their kids a TV allowance. As they get older, look, your 10-year-old isn't going to sit in front of the TV with you and have those conversations so much, but you can watch their shows with them. And you can also give them a TV allowance and say, I know a lot of families who do this, you can watch X number of hours per TV a week. How are you going to spend that allowance?
Uh-huh.
And they even actually have devices you can put on your television where kids actually kind of put their code in and then
it's counted.
It regulates how many hours they're doing.
That's interesting.
And we'll even shut it off when they've completed their time.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned allowance because I wanted to also ask you about money. What do you need to teach your children about money?
So much. You know, it's amazing because it's one of those things that most parents don't think about. And in my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, the Q chapter is Q is for quarters, all about teaching your kids about money. And what I found is that most parents think that kids are just going to magically understand money, but they don't. And I really recommend giving your children an allowance as soon as they are old enough to do basic addition and subtraction. And I also recommend that you use trips to the store, trips to the toy store as opportunities. Because if you walk into the toy store, and let's say you have $25 to spend, you walk into the toy store and you just buy your child a gift, and in your own head, you're thinking, okay, this is how much I have in my budget, they don't learn anything. But if you walk into the store with your six-year-old and you say, we have $25 to spend, how would you like to spend it? Do you want to buy a toy for $10 and one for $15? Do you want to buy one $25 toy? So on and so forth. They actually learn about the value of money. They learn about a budget, and they also learn about the idea of not getting what they want, of saving up for things. Because let's say your child says, well, I want this $30 toy. You can say, great, well, we will put this $25 aside and you can save that other $5. How would you like to earn that $5? How soon do you think we'll be able to come back if you earn a dollar a week towards that $30 gift? So it's always an opportunity for parents to teach their kids. And even though it's tough to do, the benefits are huge. To have a child who grows up to be an adult who doesn't have debt, who can manage their money, that's an amazing gift to give
huge.
Your child.
And I would imagine, much like you were talking about body image and the mother who's, you know, pinching her thighs and mm-hmm. hating her own body or,
sure.
You know, only eating half of her plate or,
yep.
You know, sends the wrong message. Your relationship, the adult or the parent's relationship to money
mm-hmm.
overall gets
Absolutely.
Translated
and
a lot.
Kids pick up on it. And in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I talk a lot about, like, I give the example of the ATM. You walk to the ATM with your child, you stick the card in and you get money. Your child doesn't understand how hard you worked for that money. It just thinks, oh, there's a machine that gives you money whenever you need money. And as parents, we have to explain that. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, mommy's making a deposit. Mommy's depositing her paycheck. Oh, mommy's making a withdrawal from our bank account where we've been saving money so that we could go get that toy.
Mm-hmm.
So kids start to have a sense. And I do recommend that children have allowances. As soon as they're able to do that
what
basic
age?
Addition, as soon as they're able to do addition and subtraction. So it really depends on your kid's development. But basic addition, subtraction, start them on allowance. And there are two schools of thought about whether it is linked to chores or not. And you have to be very careful with this because on one hand, it's really nice. I like the idea of kids associating work and pay. I think that that's a great message. On the other hand, you also have to be careful you don't create mercenary kids who say, oh, yeah, you want me to take out the garbage? That will be $5. I'm saving up for the Barbie camper. So you want to have kids who really participate in your family. And then the other option is to just give a flat allowance that is not linked to chores. To say, like, I expect you to do certain things to help in the house, and you're going to get X number of dollars per week regardless. But the most important thing about the allowance, whichever one you choose to do, is that you tell your children exactly what they are responsible for paying for. And even if they are 3-4 years old when you start them on their allowance, they need to be responsible for something. Whether it is when we go to the market and we're standing in the aisle and you point to the gum and the candy and stuff, I'm no longer going to be buying that for you. That you can use your allowance for. If you want that, that's totally up to you. And you know you have X number of dollars per week. And kids will make different choices. And it gives them power. It's very powerful for that child to be able to say, you know what, I'll have the gum, but I'm not going to have the candy bar because I'm saving my money because I want to buy something else next time.
I think that's so important. I really do. I mean, yeah. In third world countries, you know, the smallest of children are going out and collecting sticks and participating
yep.
in the family. So,
And it's such an important message for kids to start to manage their own money. And, yeah. and you know, in the book, I also talk about how you can divide the money and, you know, some for saving and some for spending and some for various different things. And, you know, a lot of parents make the mistake of it's great to encourage your kids to give to charity, to say, hey, what's important to you? And I talk a lot about it in the book. But a mistake that a lot of parents make is to say, okay, you have to give 10% or you have to give 25% of your money to a charity. You haven't taught your child anything. You've taught them to follow your instructions. You haven't taught them to give out of the goodness of their heart. You haven't taught them that it's meaningful to give. I would much rather parents say, sit down with their family and say, Dad and I, Papa and I are going to be giving $100 to a charity, and we'd love for you to help us figure out which charity and talk about the different charities, and then say, you know, if you would ever like to give, we could find some charities that are important to you because it feels so good to mom and dad to have their money make a difference and help people. You might want that experience too because it does feel really good. That's how you teach your kids to give and to be generous and to be charitable, not by saying you have to give $5 to charity.
Because so many of the schools are now requiring that children go and volunteer or
sure.
be of service, but now it becomes just a course requirement,
sure.
right?
Not yeah, I'm a little bit more for kids actually being of service in that way. I actually think that that's good because a lot of kids, especially in the wealthier areas, don't realize how fortunate they are. And until they're in an atmosphere where they're in a soup kitchen giving food to people who don't have homes or, you know, in an orphanage or walking dogs and, you know, seeing that all these dogs have been killed because of the shelters, they don't necessarily realize all the pain and suffering in the world and that they can make a difference. Because there's something about making a difference that creates a sense of self-esteem and self-efficacy for kids
sure.
that's so valuable. And that I'm all for.
I agree. But you're saying once they have that experience,
yep.
they get it. It's
yeah.
it's but being told just that, that
yeah,
it's important.
You have to hear, like, I see you have $20 you've saved up. You have to give $5 to charity. That doesn't teach a child to be charitable. It teaches them to follow instructions.
Yes. Now, a lot of parents feel that they need to put their children's lives first, that everything becomes about the children. And you see the children sort of running the household. What's your take on that? Do you think that it's you should put your marriage first or what do you?
Well, yes and no. I do think that we have to put our children first in that our children are helpless for the first few years of their lives. They really count on us. I do think that that if we plan a vacation, we need to do it with our kids in mind because, look, too many parents say, even if it's going out to dinner, we're going out to dinner. We want to go out to dinner. We don't want to pay for a babysitter, so you're coming with us, and then take their children out for a late-night dinner, past their bedtime. The kids melt down, and the parents are shocked and upset. Why is my kid screaming in a restaurant? Why are you not better behaved? So, yeah, to some extent, yes, if you're going to take your kid out to dinner, you need to do it early enough. You need to work around your child's schedule and their sleeping habits and what's best for them. Should your children have the power to run the house? Absolutely not. I actually just spoke with a man yesterday who was telling me that his 10-year-old was coming into the bed and taking the remote from him and sleeping in bed with his wife. I mean, it was quite Freudian, actually. And the kid would come into bed and would want to watch TV, and the dad would end up leaving because he didn't necessarily want to watch what the kid was watching. And their intentions were good. Their intentions were, we want our son to be able to cuddle with us. We want our son to feel safe and to know that he can come to us. But what ended up happening is they gave that child too much power. It's not healthy for a 10-year-old to be able to kick his parents out of bed and be able to have the remote control. And of course, you know, I don't like 10-year-olds watching TV anyway. So especially late at night when God knows what is on. So kids shouldn't have so much power that they feel omnipotent, so that they feel like they're in control. But parents do need to work around their children's abilities and schedules and that kind of thing.
Yeah. That's well, now you were talking about this, Dad. I mean, what is that's your what is it? D for or H for hero, being a great dad. I think so many dads feel a little out of the loop. They haven't been trained as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. There are mommy and me classes. We as women, we go to so many classes to prepare for children. There are tons of books that are really geared towards us and not as many that are geared towards men. I mean, we've got Armin Brot, who's written a series for men that's very popular. And there are a few more guys who are starting to, but men don't tend to read as many books, and it's men view parenting very differently. But one of the things that we as women have to be aware of is that men have the potential to be great parents if we let them. And it's very hard, and I know I've had my own challenges as a parent of like, no, we're going to do it my way. But that's not beneficial to husbands, and it's also not beneficial to our kids. As long as they are being safe, We sometimes need that balance. I know that, you know, my husband will let my kids explore more than I do. My kids need that. I tend to be a little more like, let's kind of keep things a little more under control. Here's a book, have some fun. But my husband really lets them do more. And that balance is great for them.
So, yeah. So you're more keeping it safe and he's more the adventurer.
Exactly.
And a little more roughhousing is okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And that does tend to be the trend.
16, yeah.
You know, it does really tend to be the trend and that's okay. And mm-hmm. And as women, we need to learn to value what men do and what they contribute as parents.
And what about parents who disagree about, you know, rearing children, you know, how to set rules and all that? What's your advice there for them negotiating?
My advice is that parents have to find a common ground, that even if you disagree, you need to find something in the middle where you can meet, and you need to both look at what is in the best interest of our kids. Sometimes when parents go head to head about those issues, it's the debate is what I want to do, not necessarily what's good for my kids. You know, I've seen a lot of dads say, well, I want my kid to sit on the couch and eat pizza with me while I watch the game. Well, you know what? That father-child bonding time is great. But is it good for your kid to sit in front of the TV for 5 hours eating pizza? No. So the finding common ground might mean they watch together for an hour and then mom does another activity with the child. But mm-hmm. if you can't find some common ground, then I really recommend some couples counseling, even just in the short term, to do a session or two to try to find that common ground.
Great. Yeah, no, I think that's important. Now, so many people or families are having pets, mm-hmm. and that's your K for kitty cat,
yes.
and the A to Z guide for raising happy and confident kids. So what's the rules for having pets in the house?
Pets are a great way for children to learn about the world and to learn about life and the spectrum of life. But one of the biggest mistakes that parents make when it comes to pets is little Johnny says, I promise I'll take care of him. I'll feed him. I'll brush him. I'll take him to the doctor.
I said that.
Yeah, and we all did. Who didn't? And parents say, well, okay, we'll let you give it a shot. And then if they don't, a lot of parents who are hardcore are like, okay, well, then we're returning the dog. Or they get really angry and frustrated. But kids can't be expected to take care of a live thing. You wouldn't give your kid your next baby to take care of. An animal is a living thing. And I have a whole chart in the A to Z guide to raising happy, confident kids of what's age appropriate, what you can expect your child to do at various different ages. But your child's job when it comes to an animal, even when they make those kind of promises, is support staff to you, not to actually be the primary caretaker of an animal.
So don't let your kids be the primary, that you do it together, that it's a family activity.
Well, that you're primary and they are helping you. You know,
that
at a certain age, they can brush the animal. Mm-hmm. At a certain age, they may be able to put food in the bowl, but you don't want to expect your 6-year-old who has the coordination to put food in the bowl, but maybe not the memory to do it every night, to be responsible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, Dr. Jen, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This was
thank
really,
you so much for
really
having me.
Valuable. So if you all want to get the book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, you can go to Dr. Jen's website, which is Dr. spelt out, www.doctor, and then Jen is JenNN.com. And you can get the book. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon
yeah,
as
Amazon
well.
Amazon has it as well.
Yep. Yeah. And you're going to be speaking on Wednesday, tomorrow night, at the Kehilat, I think, mm-hmm. Israel Early Childhood Center.
Sure, so it's part of the KI Speaker Series.
KI, okay. And so you'll be speaking about the book and yes. just how to raise children and
absolutely.
Parenting
and I have information on my website about how you can get information, how you can actually attend if you're interested
okay.
at drjen.com, okay. DrJenn.
Great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you have any comments or questions or would like to be on the show, you can email me at shrink@kcsn.org. I'd love to hear from you. Join me next week when I'll be talking with about addiction with our guest, marriage and family therapist, Nita Valens. Tune in to Shrink Wrap on Tuesdays at 6:30 because it's really all about tuning into you. I'm West Hollywood psychotherapist Phyllis Chase, and I specialize in working with creatives, couples, and lead my 7-week course, Love on Purpose, which connects women to their life purpose and the power of intentional loving. You can reach me at my website, phyllischase.com, or call me at 310-402-8888. Stay tuned for Eyes of the World with Pat Baker coming up next.
Doctor, my eyes, they cannot see the sky. Is this the price for having learned how not to cry?
The views expressed on the preceding program do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of KCSN, nor those of California State University Northridge, nor the California State University system.